The first one I'll hand up is the car park payment. That might pay. So there's a sticker map on this presentation like that, but it might be apparent on the place. What the plan, what it shows. So, as Mr. Kenny explained yesterday, this is the first preliminary design. Keeping the car parking in the road reserve, I understand that the part-time angle, if they were to get back out, to go down to the turning bay, would come out straight to them. Turn him straight out. The second plan,
so what it shows, in fact, is that Woodrum Place.
That's correct. Can you get the Woodrum Place in?
It gets extended
the road
all the way down to where the trail is.
That's right.
Right.
That's where the existing trail is, that comes off Woodrum Place.
Yes.
You can see that in the plan. So you should have a sub. Oh, sorry. Sarah Dennison's spelling order was an overnight analysis. I'm not saying it's incredible, but he worked as quickly as he could. And we balanced Osborne's evidence, looked at a number and the evidence, and Mr. Valley talked at that. Yes, his comments on that number, and gets to where he thinks things sit in terms of real GDP.
Yeah.
But if you have your hand over to him, to read the supplementary statement, just a note on the front of it, it's specific to addressing that issue.
Thank you. So Philip Osborne noted in his 2016 evidence that the tourism industry contributes over $650 million per annum to the district's economy and supports nearly 40% of the employment accommodated within its boundaries. And additionally, the district's high visitor profile operates as a gateway to the wider Otago region, supporting greater levels of visitor spend and economic contribution to the region. Tourism contributes 25% of regional GDP, operating as a developer of high levels of amenity for the local population and driving growth in most other commercial sectors. Unfortunately, tourism is not classified as a single sector by Statistics New Zealand. It covers a wide range of subsectors such as accommodation, restaurants and bars, transport, etc. Therefore, there's no official estimate of Queenstown Lakes District's tourism GDP. However, it is possible to estimate based on other data sources, as Mr. Osborne has done, to get a good non-official estimate. Data from the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment shows that Queenstown Lakes District's total real GDP, that is, the size of the whole economy, was $1.79 billion in the year to March 2016. Using NZIER's term NZ model and data on tourism spending from MBI, I estimate Queenstown Lakes District's nominal tourism GDP to be $524 million, and real GDP to be 393 million. Mr. Osborne suggests it is 650 million, though it's not clear what methodology he used to generate this estimate, or whether it is real or nominal, though I suspect the latter. I estimate that the gondola will generate 29.9 million of additional real GDP across the economy during the construction phase, and 20.4 million of additional real GDP across the economy once it is operational and bringing in tourists and when the visitor accommodation is constructed. Compared to current economy-wide real GDP of 1.79 billion, and tourism real GDP of 393 million, I believe these gains are reasonable, if not conservative. And I do have a couple of other points that I'd like to add.
Just by way of explanation, sir, the conversation is where that can be done orally.
We can write on the email if you use.
So the size of the gains reflects the fact that the gondola project would expand the capacity of the Queenstown economy. This is additional infrastructure which allows the economy.
If you speak too fast, you don't have any notes at all.
Fair point.
I got as far as the flicks.
Okay. All right, I'll start again, more slow. I get too excited about economics. And I've had too many copies. No. The size of the gains reflects the fact that the gondola project would expand the capacity of the Queenstown economy. The additional infrastructure that it would deliver allows the economic pie to expand because there are more resources in the regional economy. So this is not just about doing existing things better. Because this project is a transformational one, not an incremental one, it brings in significant new tourism spending from outside of the region. So the gains are less likely to cannibalize existing spending. I find it hard to think of anything else that would be able to generate such sustained improvements in community well-being. Such a low cost to local ratepayers and the community.
Mr. Birmingham doesn't leave until 2, and you can take questions now if you want some time to contemplate the evidence and discuss it. You can bring it back, so many more hands.
Or, I'm just wondering whether, as a local ratepayer and a fantastic improvements to community wellbeing, what I can look forward to. Well, it's a production he's making.
I'll have to respond to that. Yeah. I mean, wellbeing is a combination of both economic wellbeing but also social, environmental, cultural wellbeing, welfare in economic terms. And what we would see through this project is the injection of a huge amount of additional spending, and that has spillover effects, as my modelling has shown, not just to the gondola itself, but beyond that into the wider tourism sector. And then it will flow through to households in terms of additional wage increases, additional employment. This is injecting new money into the regional economy. And while you may not feel it directly impacting on your well-being, generally, as the economy grows, there's more employment and higher wages, that will improve economic well-being for the community as a whole.
Just clarify for me when a project is transformational rather than incremental.
There aren't any formal definitions of that, but what I'm trying to say is that rather than this being a relatively small project that marginally improves productivity in an economy, so it makes you do things slightly more efficiently, which is also good for the economy. This is about expanding the ability of the economy to generate more income. So if you think that an economy is based on resources such as land, labour, capital, what we're saying here is that the capital stock will expand quite significantly through the gondola. That allows the economy to grow more rapidly without there being significant trade-offs in terms of what other parts of the economy can produce. So that, plus the sheer the magnitude of the economic gains that this generates, in terms of perhaps 5% of tourism GDP, around 5% depending on which number you want to take, to my mind that's more than an incremental change. This is something which would have a transformational effect on the tourism industry in Queenstown.
Sorry, I missed the word there. Expands the ability of the economy to... And again,
to generate income or well-being. Without cost to the ratepayer, but also without taking away resources from other parts of the economy. Mm. So normally you assume that resources are fixed in an economy. So if one part of the economy grows faster, it uses up resources that can't be used somewhere else. What we're talking about here is expanding the amount of resources available in the economy. So there will be fewer trade-offs, there will be fewer sectors that have lower resources as a result.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next up we have Mr.
Kingdom, now you own. You don't need to read 1.1, we'll dispense with that.
Good.
But you start from 2.1.
Good morning, Commissioners. The growth in visitor numbers in Queenstown is clearly evident. Data available from Statistics New Zealand, Tourism Industry, Aotearoa, and Queenstown Airport all point to strong visitor growth over several years. MBIE's latest forecast of international visitor arrivals and visitor expenditure to New Zealand are positive for the New Zealand tourism industry and indicate continued growth from all main visitor markets. New Zealand needs to significantly increase and improve the public infrastructure and private investment in visitor accommodation and facilities to support this growth, especially in major tourism areas and arrival gateways such as Queenstown. There is a need to expand the number and range of visitor experiences available in Queenstown, and in particular, more passive or soft adventure activities and attractions, which have the capability of handling significant visitor numbers and which are not weather dependent. The proposed QPL gondola will be an excellent example of such a visitor experience. It has scale, it will operate all year, it will be suitable for all ages, it will not be weather dependent, and it will offer an outstanding visitor experience. The gondola and village will offer a significant new dimension to the overall Queenstown visitor experience, accessible to all. The proposal provides significant large-scale additions to Queenstown's infrastructure in the form of A, one of the world's longest gondola rides, enabling large numbers of visitors to enjoy exceptional landscapes and views without the need to walk over those landscapes, and B, the establishment of a unique high country village. The village will provide a base for visitors to not only enjoy the outstanding natural high country environment, but also be educated about how New Zealand respects and manages the environment, including agricultural production. Development of the proposed high capacity gondola from Remarkables Park to the Remarkables Ski Area will also open up parts of the QPL land for limited commercial accommodation development. QPL's range of accommodation styles and its relative distance from the centre of Queenstown will help distribute visitor numbers and ease the concentration of visitors in Queenstown's highest growth areas. It will also support other commercial activities developed in the area and add to the range of accommodation experiences visitors can enjoy or experience in Queenstown because of its unique location and unique travel experience. A range of more boutique forms of accommodation and privately owned residential accommodation available through organisations such as Airbnb will enhance the appeal of the region. QPL provides a strong location and visitor experience differentiation where guests will be able to enjoy a unique New Zealand high country experience. Accommodation located at QPL will therefore have a marketing advantage over competitors, and this will assist in making the overall development financially viable. The rural farm-based development zones in the Alpine setting planned at Queenstown Park, accessed by way of the spectacular gondola ride, are consistent with the National Tourism 2025 strategy, developed by Tourism Industry Aotearoa with wide industry support, including from Tourism New Zealand, to develop and enhance New Zealand as an appealing Four Seasons international visitor destination. Enabling high quality rural residences also supports and improves the desirability of Queenstown as a vibrant, high value international visitor destination.
Just to provoke you slightly, Queenstown is getting more and more visitors and therefore it needs more and more facilities for those visitors to enjoy, you were saying. Presumably those visitors when you provide the facilities, then you'll get more and more visitors. When does it turn into Queenstown's got a tiger by the tail?
It's a very good point, Commissioner. Tourism New Zealand and the former Minister of Tourism, John Key, have spoken about this issue. Queenstown is the jewel of the crown for New Zealand. New Zealand is a highly perceived international destination, but we are boutique in any form of the world scale. From a New Zealander perspective, and looking back over 40 years, it might appear that there's been rapid development of Queenstown as a visitor destination from its roots. But it still, in my view, has plenty of capacity to grow. The issues and challenges that Queenstown has are mainly to do with infrastructure in the central area, in my view, from a visitor industry perspective. And the solution to enabling sustained and sustainable growth, profitable growth, and growth that enjoys a social license from the community is by expanding that growth geographically within the region. This doesn't mean that every acre of rural hinterland is developed with 5-star hotels, but it does mean that we need to expand the territory. And when we think about Queenstown, we think about the Queenstown Lakes Basin. Remarkables Park is right at the centre of that. There is plenty of capacity for an area for development and growth of Queenstown in a master planned, highly desirable way. Not to mention Quarra Village, Jack's Point, Arrowtown, Lake Hayes, and further afield, Taunau, Wanaka, even Kingston. There will become a time where New Zealand achieves an optimal number of visitors. We're currently at 3.6 million. I don't know what the optimal number of visitors is, but I don't think it's limited at 3.6 million. So the visitors are coming. The airline capacity is there. The airport capacity is growing, not only in Queenstown, but Auckland and Christchurch and Wellington. And as Kevin Bowler, the former Chief Executive of Tourism New Zealand, said, we can't stop people going to Queenstown. So we need to plan for the growth. And target high value visitors that value the experience, that are prepared to pay, and that perceive that they receive value for money for their visitor experience here. And that's a high quality visitor experience.
Did you hear Mr. Greenaway's evidence yesterday?
No.
Because he was discussing something, extensively discussing something quite different, possibly quite low valued visitors. In terms of the sort of Chinese incentive market in particular, he was just talking about almost a mass production of.
Can I speak to the China market?
Yeah.
The China market, and it's been publicised in Queenstown, is going through a transformation from the growth from almost no visitors, leisure visitors, a few years ago, to largely groups on very short itineraries, on shopping tours, many of whom, if not most of whom, never got to Queenstown. What we now have is mono-destination visitors, many of whom are travelling independently, many of whom are younger, many of whom have, in New Zealand terms, high discretionary incomes and highly value their experience in New Zealand. This is a very, very different mix of visitors from the Chinese visitors that we had even 2 years ago. The forecast number of Chinese visitors to New Zealand, including the growth of leisure visitors, coming from multiple locations that have been opened up by new air routes, high-value visitors for New Zealand, largely.
So, Mr. Green, I really was talking about that package thing. Are you saying it's a bit out of date?
Look, it's still there, but it's declining in total volumes, and it's certainly declining as a proportion of the number of visitors. And those shopping tours were visiting Auckland and Rotorua, and their average duration of stay was at most 3 days.
What Mr. Greenway was talking about was the Chinese incentive market, which, as I understand it, has actually only started this year.
Well, my understanding of incentive travel, and we have a very, very good example coming up with Amway next year, is high value tourism, not low value tourism. So, I'm sorry, I didn't hear Mr. Greenway's evidence, and I can't speak to the specifics of what he was referring to.
He was talking about company sort of rewards packages.
Yeah, I understand incentive travel, and incentive travel, with only very, very limited exceptions, is high value tourism.
I gave the impression similar to yours. I don't think it's very much said it was low value, but I sort of got the impression the work that comes out on a reward.
Yeah.
But I'm sure Mr. Hamilton speaks to what that means for the recipient.
His model, if you like, was large numbers of people just going up the gondola, barely an hour at the top, looking around and grabbing a coffee and then coming back again. Along their way.
I don't know. Look, this is going to be a significant visitor attraction for Queenstown. It's going to be a high value in terms of intrinsic value experience. It's going to give people incredible, spectacular views from the top. The thought that you would race up there, have a cup of coffee and race back. One or two people, a few people might do that, but I'm sure that the majority of people will value the experience.
Well, they do it in large numbers with the existing Skyline operation, don't they?
It's quite a different proposition.
In what way is it different?
In that it's a short duration experience, whereas this will be a much longer duration experience, and it is taking them to a much higher vantage point. Just think of the mountaintop experiences that you and I, anybody, can experience, for example, in Switzerland. There's several of them. They run year-round, and they have people who take a half-day experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'd just like to ask, I wanted to explore the difference between the Chinese and Australian markets and the offer, because the Queenstown that I think of is adventure and outdoors and actually do some of the work yourself. And I see in the remnants, I think it's about 5.3 in remnants and cheap, you identify the Chinese market as growing and high value, but Australia is still New Zealand's largest visitor market. Do we get lots of Australians here in Queenstown? And if so, what are the prospects for their interest and activity?
Right. My understanding is that Australians perceive Queenstown incredibly highly. The brand of Queenstown in Australia, my understanding is as strong, if not stronger, than the brand of New Zealand. The desirability of getting on a plane and coming to New Zealand is greatly enhanced if it's a visit to Queenstown rather than a visit to Auckland or Wellington or Christchurch. In fact, they're staying away from Christchurch in very significant numbers at the moment. The growth in air capacity, international air capacity, is all with Australia, and the numbers that have been travelling trans-Tasman into Queenstown direct have expanded exponentially in the last 5 to 8 years. So Australia is the largest visitor market for New Zealand. It's not the fastest growing. It's a high component, reasonably high component, and a comparatively high component with every other visitor market, of people that are described as Australians are visiting friends and family, as well as leisure and business visitors, and a high proportion of those visiting friends and family are actually Kiwis with New Zealand passports, but who are living in living in Australia and visiting New Zealand. They're dispersed throughout New Zealand. The China market, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, was almost non-existent in Queenstown, say 5 years ago, 4 years ago even, and is now much more significant. And that's because the duration of these new travellers are 8, 9, and 10 days compared with the previous visitors who were here for 3 days. This change was forced by the Chinese government, by the way. They passed laws making the previous shopping tour practices, which were evident in New Zealand, illegal, because they were effectively ripping their own people off.
I have always had the impression that Australians came to Queenstown for skiing, because it's accessible more so than their own ski fields and better.
Certainly,
is that still true?
That is certainly true, that they come here for skiing, but it's not the only reason they come here.
No, well, it wouldn't be if they're coming here in greater numbers.
And another significant opportunity, which this hearing is not about, is the opportunity for growing conferencing and meetings from the Australian market. It's a significant opportunity. Now, if there was as is planned, a remarkable park, conference centre, and the Gondola experience, that's a very compelling package for an Australian conference organiser to bring their conference to Queenstown. And the decision will be, bring it to Queenstown. It won't be, shall we go to New Zealand?
I did want to hear a little bit more from you about soft or passive activities, because
yes,
once again, the established reputation of Queenstown is active. And so, is it that when you need to grow the offer, you have to grow it in something else rather than do more of what you're doing at the moment?
Absolutely.
That's what's going on.
Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with active tourism, and there are many operators, but they're all small businesses largely.
Well, they are.
They are small businesses offering active experiences. But if you look at the visitor experiences that, and we're really focused here on international, but we can also talk about domestic visitors, as researched in the International Visitor Survey, the most popular activities and experiences and that visitors experience in New Zealand are passive experiences. And they are experiences that do involve engagement with the environment. So there are things like short walks, boat trips, food and wine experiences, and the likes of those things. Jumping off bridges, paragliding, parachuting, adrenaline pumping experiences are there, but they're not what the majority of visitors are doing. Queenstown's offer, if you like, or mix of visitor experiences skewed, And it's made a name for itself in that. That's great. But there is an opportunity to expand the offer.
Thanks, Mr.
Chair. A couple of things. In your summary in paragraph 4.3, you say enabling high quality residents improves the desirability. Is there a shortfall of those?
I'm just saying that the quality of the overall destination, including the the residential mix, adds to the vibrancy and the appeal of the destination. As opposed to, for example, by comparison, dare I say it, Rotorua. If we were to compare and contrast, it's a big difference.
Yep. Yes, but what I'm saying, what I'm wondering is there a shortage of those high quality rural residences in this district?
I'm not saying there's a shortage. I'm saying that enabling, high quality rural residences,
so
as opposed to urban residences,
anywhere in the district,
it just adds to the overall feeling. I mean, in this regard, Queenstown is rather unique.
Hmm. Yeah, the question I've got, can you raise travelling to the tops of mountains in Switzerland?
Yes.
I happen to know Switzerland better than most people.
Yes.
For various reasons.
Yes.
Is there in international tourism a price competition for that sort of thing? Especially when you're talking China, they're halfway between New Zealand and Switzerland.
Well, there's always price competition in the free market.
Mm.
I think the evidence in New Zealand is that we are charging and achieving international prices for our experiences in New Zealand.
Are you familiar with the prices of the mountain lifts in Switzerland?
Well, I've been on one of them myself a few years ago.
Which one?
Mount Atlas.
Right, a short one. Mm.
It seemed expensive to me at the time. But the price just pales into insignificance.
Mm. Okay.
When you consider the question of value for money and the experience, people are wanting to come to New Zealand for unique experiences and are prepared to pay for them.
Does safety come into that?
Safety is a consideration. It's more important to some countries than others. The adrenaline junkies might be completely frustrated by the requirements of the health and safety.
I wasn't thinking in terms of experiences, I was thinking in terms of the likes of terrorism.
Oh, well, look, New Zealand is benefiting and is, I would say, likely to continue to benefit from a perception of safety and a track record of safety. Perhaps one of the risks for New Zealand, not that this has got nothing to do with Queenstown or the Gondola, I would have thought, but when you wonder about, or we speculate about what dark clouds might be on the horizon, and there's been plenty over the last 15 to 20 years in terms of regional tourism, what might be something that has a major king hit on the New Zealand tourism industry? It could be a terrorist activity, and we can't assume that New Zealand would never be subject to something such as that. but I'm not sure. Have you got a question that relates to the gondola?
No, it was the attraction of New Zealand in general compared to, say, destinations in Europe.
We have a perception of being a highly desirable, safe, clean and green destination that is highly sought after. And more people are choosing to actually visit rather than aspire to visit. And this is one of the things that can contribute to the changing mix of visitors to higher value visitors.
Now my next witness, Mr. Porter. Now I know you don't have any questions for her, but Mr. Porter needs to patiently for the hearing to prepare a supplemental statement if you'd like to present.
Although I'm skipping 1.1 and 1.2, I'm going to point out because part of this paper is about risk, and I can assure you we don't embark lightly on developments that cost $80+ million, and having a background as a chartered accountant, although I don't practice, is a good training for being averse to risk and managing it. So I hark back a little bit to my earlier experiences in business. So Queenstown Park. At the time of purchase of the western end of Queenstown Park, formerly, at the time of purchase of Queenstown Park, I should say, it was a very, very run-down station. The improvement program and operation of the property to date is only able to be undertaken by virtue of the financial and advisory support of QPL shareholders and Port of Trust. Given the above, the close proximity of Queenstown Park to Remarkables Park, its sister company, Queenstown Park being virtually surrounded by tourist activities and a rapidly growing tourism sector in Queenstown requiring increasing supplies of visitor accommodation and tourist infrastructure to extend and enhance Queenstown as New Zealand's leading tourist destination. An obvious consideration for utilising Queenstown Park was to investigate options that could provide alternative sources of income from tourism. The Queenstown Park vision is to provide the opportunity for a wide range of international visitors and New Zealanders to enjoy and better understand New Zealand's exceptional environments, how these need to be managed to be a sustainable asset for current and future generations, and where appropriate to be managed for agri-food production. The gondola is a key component offering opportunities to enable alternative modes of transport for commuters, opportunities for tourism activities within Queenstown Park, and to enhance the existing ski field access experience at the Remarkable Ski Field. Providing certainty to a future gondola and a clear path for the future development of Queenstown Park through a set of provisions that strike a balance between tourism, farming and rural residential outcomes and environmental and landscape considerations provides a positive framework to enable facilities that can be sensitively accommodated within the Queenstown environment. These facilities will enhance and complement Queenstown Lakes District's contribution to New Zealand as a world-class tourism destination. And coming from some of the questions I've heard in the last few days, I think it's worth stressing, expanding on what are the anticipated tourism activities at Queenstown Park Station, many of which work in conjunction with the gondola access. These include the commuter activities, effectively road substitution, sightseeing, and if I can just expand on that, it's 10 kilometres, it's 2,400 metre river crossings, a 500 metre gully clear span gully crossing. It looks out over the whole basin. You can see out in the Southern Alps where there's always snow summer and winter. It operates 365 days of the year. It will be, and I've travelled on lots of gondolas, and it will be a stunning sightseeing experience. Of course, alpine winter sports access, an alternative to the road, and not only an alternative to the road, but the ability for them to build capacity because they lack car parking, because of constraints on car parking. Importantly, the opportunities to leverage, as Mr. Hamilton referenced, the Remarkables Base operations, including in conjunction with the Remarkables Park Convention Centre. But Mr. Anderson will tell you, I've seen from memory, I think that building cost about $25 million, really only gets used probably for 3.5 months of the year. With this gondola going up there for 365 days of the year, there's potential for that building to get, and it's a magnificent building, to get substantially more use. And then there's mountain biking opportunities, and this is not just the aggressive downhill facilities that we can put through Remarkable, through Queenstown Park, but there's also an easy ride down the road, and there's a resort in Maui and Honolulu. People go up a mountain there called Ulupalakua to ride down the road, not particularly taxing. And then there's hiking access, but that's not only the river trails, but there's also potential for high country trails. We're investigating the potential for at least a two-day 30-kilometre walk from the top of the gondola through the station, stopping over at one of the points within it, probably the village, and then walking out or biking out. Talking more about the resort village activities, certainly food experiences. We see from Five Star to Savannah Burgers, and I say Savannah Burgers because the farm station is a deer farm, and I think many of the things that we can do at Queenstown Park are integrated. We can link back the tourist experiences, the things that we can do or that can extend from the station itself. Examples, and we see the food experience there, not just being an eating, a culinary experience, but a vision, organic gardens, visionary delight, educational experience about what's happening. A good example is a facility in the UK called Dalesford Organic. Then mini conferencing, breakout extension to the Remarkables Park Conference Centre, but even just for small mini conferencing. And particularly, I can see it being used by agricultural organisations. Wedding venues, of course, because of the views and the demand for different places for people to get married. Arts and crafts, again, many of those things in the arts and crafts shops can be linked to the station, whether they be deer, skins, antlers, velvet, bull, mounted trophies, many things like that. The Arts and Crafts Visitor School is a concept we've taken from a facility called Anderson Ranch in Aspen. It's a school where people can go for all manner of craft and arts education for short courses, usually a week to 2 weeks. Ultra sporting activities, we get constant requests, not only within our company, but from others in this district. It's somewhat mad in this district on things like marathons and half marathons, combination events, and even challenges running up near vertical slopes. There's plenty of opportunities at the station for that type of operation. Environmental, one thing we're very passionate about, and really we really need the zoning to achieve it, is an environmental tourism and a research centre that can be both an educational facility that can extend people's appreciation not only of what they see from the gondola, but what they see on the ground as they go around. Good examples of facilities we really like is the Rocky Mountain Institute, the Banff Institute, both environmental facilities, a very fantastic facility I've seen recently in Hangzhou, another one of our sister cities here, a place called Westbrook, which is a wetlands environmental museum, but it's the same concept. And these facilities typically are tourism education at the front, but behind them there's research facility usually as well. And then the village is almost certainly going to be a gateway to other station activities, obviously farm tour type activities. Those farm tours are not just for people who want to just look at what's going on. There's a real demand in this district for people coming who want to, who both scientists or farmers from overseas or whatever, who want more specialised tours, who want to understand better what we do, how we do it, and what's unique about farming in New Zealand. And in that respect, I think there's a real, it's combined with the Environmental Tourism Research Centre. I'm a past deputy chairman of one of the producer boards. I think there's a real need for farming in New Zealand and up its act in terms of explaining its use, better use of the environment, and explaining, in terms of not the natural environments, but the environments that we actually use for food production, how we do that and how we do it in a responsible way. And then, of course, there's things that go back to gateway activities. This horse riding, fishing, kayaking, and the linkage to the tourist jet boating facilities. And then visitor accommodation, of course, and we see a wide range of options for everything from B&Bs for hikers, bikers, fishers, service departments, boutiques, to six-star facilities, perhaps, that have spas and maybe nutrition courses and whatever going on within them. And Mr. Hamilton touched on it, it's not in these notes, but perhaps the Marcus Park linkages are important, is that the development of Queenstown Park benefits from Remarkables Park, but Remarkables Park will benefit from Queenstown Park because of the benefits of the convention centre, the more urban hotels you find at Remarkables Park, but who will use the gondola, the ferry terminal connection from Remarkables Park, and we own it, we co-own with Gawarra Jet, and Real Journeys, the largest, the former Ngāi Walls here in town, as well as the facility at Remarkables Park. And since there's no media here, and another option that we're looking at together with the airport is perhaps having another gondola that goes from the ferry terminal to the base terminal of this gondola station, the main one we're talking about here, up to the top of the village through our entertainment area and with the potential to dock straight into the airport terminal. And they're looking at a couple of options, that one of which could facilitate that. And look, the letters of support that were attached to my evidence show that there are others from tourist organisations to probably Skyline, but still supporting the need for more tourist infrastructure options in Queenstown. And then perhaps I added this bit about the Gondola business case, because I've detected some questions in particular yesterday that might be an interest in how that how our business case works out. And these business cases are always really done more as a sensitivity analysis, and so as to what the effects are. So I detected that there was that it was worth explaining, not only is it a 365-day year operation, so the prevailing wind in Queenstown's westerly, the more vigorous wind, if I can put it that way, is a southerly. This gondola facility is protected from both of those winds. It would be extremely normally about the only wind, and that it's a chasing wind, and for a gondola that's the best wind. Rather than a crosswind, we think it's extremely unlikely, apart from maybe a breakdown or something, that this won't be able to operate for 365 days of the year. It's the benefit in Queenstown from the fact that we're one of the really truly four-season destinations, tourist resort destinations, that's unusual, but it benefits operations like this. But interesting, you'll be interested to know, I'll just put some percentages down here. Only 10 to 20, and this is revenue, not passengers, only 10 to 20% of the revenue comes from the alpine use. And that's partly because the alpine use is for only 3.5 months of the year. It's a high volume use, but because they're paying upwards of $100 for their ski ticket, they're not going to pay another $75 to ride on the gondola. So really the bus trip costs about $25 to go up. So our range of prices for this is really in the sort of $15 to $30 from children up to adults. So that limits the amount of revenue you get from it. It's important revenue because often you wouldn't have a revenue in the winter when in many places winter's the off season. Well, fortunately here it's not. But in fact, it's worth noting that it's the summer season. in Queenstown actually does exceed the winter season in terms of numbers of visitors. So, there'd be a nice additional small revenue potential option, but at very low ticket prices from commuters. So again, high volume use. The bulk of the gondola traffic in the morning will be more going out from Remarkables Park and going up, and so the cabins coming in will be empty. So from Lake Hay Estate, Bridesdale and Shotover Country, and fortunately the council owns a big car park, a big area at the bottom which can flood once every 15 years or so, so it's only good for car parking. There's a real potential to have a park and ride facility there, again, high volume, but we'd be looking at very low ticket prices for that, comparable probably to the buses. So 70 to 80% of the revenue from all users, excluding, it comes from all users excluding Alpine Sports and commuters. And that's why I was really going through the list of activities and why we believe people are going to be able to do this gondola, because there's a lot to do. And it can take, I don't believe that people will ride on this gondola for a quick run up there, a quick run down again. They'll stop at the village, either the way up or the way down. There's a midpoint station, there's another viewing platform, and then there's the remarkable facilities, doesn't mean a pun, on the ski field, both in terms of the really outstanding base building they've got, and they've got the chairlifts, and there's no reason why those chairlifts can't operate in the summer. And one of the chairlifts in particular, the Shadow Basin chairlift, is the one that extends up to the back ridge, the top ridge of the Remarkables, and there's a viewing platform up there. If you go up on that chairlift in the summer, and even in winter, it's only about a 15-minute walk up to the viewing platform that overlooks the lake, everything to the west, Queenstown and the Southern Alps. I mean, it is absolutely extraordinary. In fact, I know some people in the ski company, you think, you know, what the hell, it's about the only, you know, that's an incredible reason to go there. And we occasionally, when we want to impress an investor, we fly them up there in a helicopter and stand them up there, and it literally blows your socks off. I mean, standing up there, it is an utterly, utterly incredible view. So there will be people that will do, maybe will go just for that, and it'll certainly be part of the advertising. There's a lot of, as I say, we wouldn't embark on this much expenditure, both in terms of planning but also the actual facility, if we weren't convinced and hadn't done a lot of work to be satisfied that a lot of people will be interested in this type of tourism. And I think one of the things that does appeal to us about it is that it's a unique piece of infrastructure for Queenstown in some respects, and certainly in one respect, is that it actually does not put a big drag on the road infrastructure in Queenstown. A lot of visitors will stay at Remarkables Park. The ferry terminal we've got will provide people, tourists can come from town much nicer than going by road. And I actually learned that from Switzerland when I was going to ski at a ski field outside Geneva, and I was on a train looking down and I saw the ferry on the lake and I thought, I'm in the wrong place. I should not be looking down, I should be out there looking out, which was the genesis of the ferry. So, there's plenty of good commercial reasons why we believe this will work. And I'm happy, I've brought the feasibility with me if there's any assumption questions you want to know more about.
Extensively about the gondola this morning, so thank you for that. What you haven't mentioned at all is the rural residential component. How important is that to the overall financial viability of the project?
It's fairly important. Even before it's undertaken. It helps underwrite the commercial value of the asset, and coming also from a finance banking background, I can say people are always interested in the scale of the asset that underwrites the facilities that you're doing. So it helps. It definitely helps in that respect. It also, they're not going, with the exception of the residential within the village itself, where this would definitely be workers' accommodation, both for those facilities in the mountain, but those rural residential houses are higher end, and so they are definitely going to, you know, they're going to help support the higher end facilities in the village, and to be frank, they actually, the type of people that we expect will buy those, will be buying them because they want to be in that environment. And some of those people who've already talked to us are philanthropically minded. So the sort of people that are likely to help support and underwrite things like the environmental centre.
Can I follow up on that?
Yes.
Where did the number 90 come
from? 90?
It's 90, isn't it? 90 houses in the different pods for housing. So totally, I'm just curious because somebody must have come up with it.
Mr. Sargent, essentially it's the pods are identified and then reference a marker that's a rural residential lot size in terms of the movement in the pods. So that's where the number. And it's kind of it's not meant to be a target, but it was a number that was reached if you look at how the rural residential zones were controlled and what were identified as developable areas, or areas that could absorb some residential, and that's the form is that simple. And then of course that was tested against, was there enough room between residents of Ms. Skidmore's design and her imperatives, and Mr. Brown, I think that number was achievable. So the short point is, their evidence, they wouldn't want to see it go any higher. Don't know if I should say this, but they're comfortable with it lower. But that was a threshold that we work off the rural residential pattern.
Okay, right.
And
I wouldn't say I would be happy if it went lower.
What
I could say is that if you were concerned that we were going to achieve the quality that you wanted in terms of landscaping between these houses, then if there had to be a restricted discretionary and a discretionary, a slightly tougher regime to extend the numbers, to take the numbers up to 90, we're confident that we will be able to achieve that. And if you, this will surprise me a little bit, but anyway, you might as well always make them uncomfortable. So, when we were sitting down working out, months ago, what we could do here and what we might do. We did canvas all options, and certainly my architect, urban designer, said this is a gross waste of space. You should be pushing for a village here at 500 or 600 houses because he said you could accommodate that on this land, to which we said, well, no, that isn't what we want to do at all. We've looked at it very carefully with our landscape people, and we do believe that we can fit that number in terms of a good environmental outcome in terms of landscaping. I mean, there's always the argument that less is more, and so we certainly don't. We're not just trying to cram houses in. It's got to be a good outcome because they are. I mean, frankly, as I said, they are a source of capital to help underwrite the project as well.
Yeah, well, and that was really the direction I was coming from, because she said that the housing is fairly important because it underwrites the commercial value of the asset. And so I was backwards engineering in my mind and thinking, was there some, proportion of the investment that is represented by that underwriting? I mean, and I thought it might have informed how you got to 90.
No, it didn't inform how we got to 90. We got to 90 by looking at where we could put those houses, how we could landscape them, and what would fit within the environment. And if anything, as I say, if you go back to my architect, it's a conservative assessment. So it certainly helps. It doesn't fund the whole thing, but it does help.
You may have guessed that particular article doesn't bring evidence.
But we did consider all, we considered all options.
I did indicate yesterday that I was interested in how you came up with the projection and visitor arrivals, which, because Mr. Bangle relied heavily on your numbers there.
Well, we we extensively, we constantly monitor what's happening in Queenstown. We're very aware of the tourist numbers. One of our staff is the director of Destination Queenstown, and we just have lots of discussions with the airport. In fact, probably the most aggressive numbers are their more recent numbers, which they only made public a week or so ago. The reason we're always interested in the airport's numbers is the airport numbers are in fact more relevant in some respects to us than any other number, because they tend to be the higher value market that comes through Queenstown. And their numbers at the moment is, in fact, when they came out, when they talked to us about 3 months ago about tourist numbers, they were saying that they had 1.7 million visitors in and out per annum, and I noticed that that's actually, I think it's gone now up to just under 1.9 million visitors in and out just in a matter of months. They're expecting that by 2025 that number will have grown to 3.2 million. And by 2035, we would have grown to 5 million, and 2045, 7 million, which they're not predicting that they're chasing. But so it's very, very significant growth in terms of tourist numbers. And as I say, that's the market. The fly-in, the fly-out market for so many Frontiers driving is very important to us. So, but our percentage of those markets that we're looking at capturing is very small initially, and then we build into our sensitivity model some growth factors, and in the first few years people get used to it, we get a little higher growth, but all our predictions, going back to my accountants rather than the marketing side of my brain, about managing downside. So we're pretty hard on ourselves when it comes to what size of the market we think we can attract.
Thank you.
No, I didn't have any other questions. Thank you, sir. So we have Mr. Sargent to come up. I'll get a summary, and then we have Mr. Anderson one. We have to see how we travel. I think that's all right.
So those questions are, is there a resource management issue to be addressed? And then over the page, are the QPS provisions the most appropriate means by which to achieve the objectives? And then finally, the need for complex provisions in the sequencing of development, which I largely covered in my supplementary statement. In my primary statement, while acknowledging that the RMA no longer makes the identification of issues mandatory, I pointed to the Council and Queenstown Park evidence that demonstrated that Queenstown has an excess demand for visitor activities based on the rural and open spaces resources of the district. The issue identified was, where is this demand to be met, and how can the supply of the product be increased so as to ensure the quality of resources on which it is based is sustainably managed? My primary evidence then went on to identify that the objectives and policies in sections 3 and 6 and 21 of the proposed plan have already responded to some extent to this issue statement. Policy 6315 encourages plan changes in preference to ad hoc subdivision and development for the rural lifestyle and rural residential zone to ensure that these occur in areas where the landscape can accommodate change. The rural zone also contains provisions that would enable the vulnerable. It could be that the question above requires a district-wide study as to where visitor activities might best be accommodated within the district's outstanding landscapes. But the council has not gone down this path. Instead, it has simply set the high bar in policy 6312 that subdivision development is inappropriate in almost all locations within the Wakatipu Basin and inappropriate in many locations throughout the district-wide outstanding natural landscapes. So, in the context of this plan review, QPL has suggested a zone change to accommodate visitor activities within a Nominal location that has been supported by a specific landscape analysis that identifies the ability of the lower areas of the land to accommodate development. The zone purpose is described on the objectives and policies to provide for development while protecting the landscape values and maintaining and enhancing ecological values. The zone change also enables tourism-oriented rural and outdoor activities that rely very little on existing infrastructure. So the next question. There are clearly other options to achieve the above outcomes. As noted, the rural zone provides for the gondola. There could just be a gondola corridor and a zone providing for the rural visitor village around the gondola turn point in Bay 3. With the other activities being consented within the rural zone, or the landowner could seek resource consent for all activities under the rural zone. However, the whole point of undertaking a zone change, as preferred by policy 6315, is to consider matters in an integrated way and to provide certainty and consistency of outcomes. These outcomes are for both the outstanding natural landscape and the ecology of the land, and for the gondola, which is a very large investment. If the consenting pathway was to be adopted, i.e. just achieving things by way of consent, what is it that the environment, including people and communities, misses out on? Firstly, the potential location of future development on this land would no longer be considered in a comprehensive manner. The rural residential and rural visitor activity areas that now remain have been subject to successive refinement as to where the most appropriate locations are. As a measure of their appropriateness, I also consider that development outside of these areas should be a non-compliant activity. Secondly, the framework consenting requirements for the comprehensive development activities would be missing, and it's as now set out in Rule 4448. And the matters for discretion therein. Thirdly, rural subdivision and development would not result in landscape and ecological mitigation between the lots within the balanced rural area as proposed for the QPSC. Fourthly, the zone results in superior rural land use outcomes for significant natural areas and water quality. And finally, and hardly least, I would say, there would not be the 7 kilometres of new trail created by private investment. And I admit that the provisions are fairly complex. So, hence the last question. The provisions are complex due to the need to balance certainty and flexibility for development over a number of years, to enable a modest level of development prior to the gondola, but also to lock in the commitments to the gondola and the trail. And in my supplementary evidence, I provided an explanation of the sequencing of development and the importance of the CDA consents and the trail implementation. And so I'd just like to take you to those, which is in paragraph 3.3 of my supplementary. So I start off by looking at the at 3.3A, the Comprehensive Development Activities Rule, which relates to four different matters, all of which relate to the framework or the structuring of development within RB4 and rural residential area 3 as well. And none of those relate to actual buildings. They all relate to setting the scene. They're all, and under design, they're all consentable activities. Preparation of land, construction of roads, pedestrian paths and cycle routes, works for the establishment of open space areas, such as earthworks, landscaping and planting necessary to achieve a village or rural character. And so they all set the framework for what then happens. And those consents are prerequisites to what then happens in those areas. So reading on down at B, these activities provide for the structure of development within each of these areas before building development begins. This commitment is consistent with objectives 44.2.1a and 44.2.1b concerning integrated development and in regard to the ONL values. And next we've got provision of information on the trial plan for the trial from Boyd Road to RB3 prior to any development within the zone. And the completion of the trial works within 12 months of the gondola dam operational or the completion of 6 rural residential dwellings. So there is a definite commitment to that needs to be given to the construction of the trail within that consent, which needs to be applied for. Next, the gondola being operational prior to any commercial or community activity within RB3. Now I note that Mr. Buxton raised the issue of why just identify commercial community activity, why not residential and visitor accommodation as well. And that could be the case as well, but I think you need to consider the sort of reality of those other activities happening before the gondola to any great extent for commercial and community activity within RB3. I mean, each of those rural residential areas need roading to some extent and servicing. And that all has to happen together. And it might be that there are, you know, a handful of rural residential activities commence before the rural residential area. However, I think it's unrealistic to expect and read that as enabling 90 rural residential lots prior to the gondola. I mean, that's just not going to be the case. The next one down is the upgrading of Boyd Road intersection, etc., prior to residential or visitor accommodation activity. And again, Mr. Buxton said, well, you know, why not include the other two activities, commercial and community, in that as well. I think the concern there is that, and even with residential or visitor accommodation activity, the thing is that the way that's read, one single new house on the zone would trigger the upgrade of the intersection. At the moment, that's the way that reads, which is fairly, I think, in terms of an effect, on an effects basis, that's fairly tough, but that's what the commitment is. So that's what needs to happen as per that rule. And equally, the addition of commercial or community activity in there also means that that could be read as meaning the gondola itself. So the idea of the gondola is that you actually reduce traffic activity along the road and through the intersection. So I don't really see the need for those activities to be added into
Next is the limitation of 6 residential units in rural residential activity area 3, 4, 5 and 6, unless the trail has been extended from the pedestrian bridge at rural visitor activity area 3 further down the river to rural visitor activity area 4. So again, that's emphasising the importance of the gondola and moving to and from the zone. And finally, I'll comment on the restriction on general vehicular access to the zone through the crowded entry of Boyd Road. At the moment, in other words, that only really comes through in the comprehensive development activity provision, where a matter of discretion is the is a focusing on avoiding private vehicle activity. So it doesn't actually say that you've got a gated entry at Boyd Road, but I think that's definitely one way of doing that. So the access is proposed to be limited to rural residential property owners and guests, service vehicles and tourism-related vehicles linking to the visitor accommodation. And with the details of how the restriction is to be achieved is by way of not assessment criteria, but that matter of discretion. So just noting by way of summary that those requirements in 2, 3, 4 and 5 are all in keeping with the objective on primarily accessing the QPSZ by water, gondola or trail linkages. So the other matters that I wish to cover by way of summary.
Well, I think the sensible thing, I think, is to take the morning agenda before we start the questions, because otherwise we just get a couple of questions and we'll have to stop anyway. So we'll do that, and we'll be at 11:40.
Thank you, sir.